Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, November 17th, 2014. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Hey, happy Monday.
Happy Monday.
What's so funny about that, Al?
I don't know. They do TGIF.
Yeah, I know.
They got
hump
it's Friday.
Day.
What are we thinking for? What is,
you've got
yeah,
hump
yeah,
day
Wednesday.
And hump day.
It's hard for me to get really enthusiastic
about
a Monday. That's my problem.
I love Mondays.
You like Mondays?
I love Mondays. I prefer Mondays over Friday. And
well, you could have a convention and hold it. All the members, everybody who prefers Mondays over Fridays, there'll be a convention over at the phone booth. There might be 5 or 10 people who show up. I don't know.
Well, we're in an elite group.
I guess so.
A very special group. So with that, gold also is a very elite group, a very special group. You have gold just down $2.30. Not bad for a Monday after the large run-up we had on the end of last week. We have silver down 17 at $16.26. We have platinum down 9 at $12.04. Palladium was up, though, 4 at $771. And the USDX today was trading stronger, 0.37 at $87.92. And you also have crude oil just down a few cents, down 0.34. at $75.48. And the paper markets today. Let's go to the paper markets. And not a lot of action there. The Dow was up 13. It seems like a quiet Monday, but the Dow was up 13 points at 17,647. NASDAQ down 17 at 4671. S&P up 1.50 at 2041. 10-year yield up 0.02 at 2.34%. So it really was sort of a strange day in the markets. There's just all this news and things about to bust open. I can't believe half the headlines that I read, and yet it's just like, oh, it's just a very mild day. But it will catch up. I do believe the Asian markets got hit. They've all were down 1% to 2%. Nikkei got hammered. I think that was down like 500 points. Shanghai was down, not quite as bad percentage wise, but so it didn't follow through though into our markets. And of course, now our markets are probably the most rigged markets of the world, and everybody knows.
Yeah, you know, there's a good point to that too. The problems that we saw in the other markets have not yet reached American markets. And this is probably a tribute to the degree of control or manipulation of the American markets. Not necessarily, but there's a good chance that's an explanation. Is that a good thing, Melody? I mean, when we have something like the plunge protection team that prevents the stock market from falling, I don't know what the limit is, 500 points in a day, the Dow? I don't know if that's an accurate number or not, but is that a good thing? Are they really helping us? Or is that something where we should take our medicine as it comes through the door and be done with it? If they protect us from these falls, does that mean we are permanently protected from these declines? Or does it mean that the force of the decline is building up like water behind a dam that's eventually going to burst and we're going to get it all at once? I don't know which is better, Melody. Should we take the bad news all at once, or should we take it a chunk at a time as it comes down the road?
I certainly believe the truth. I mean, free markets are always better than rigged markets. I mean, you can make decisions. You can, you know, you can have a life. Yeah. But when things are certainly to the degree they are today, the only people that they're protecting, of course, are the banks.
Well, the banks, even the
those are the power, you know, to some degree, the governments. But, you know, it's mainly the government is protecting other people, corporations, and of course, you know, the elite. So, no, I mean,
it's protecting, the government is protecting its perceived ability to successfully manage the economy.
Well, what it's protecting is the fiat currency is to keep the confidence level. So they need that. So they need to keep these markets to some degree stable. And, I mean, we saw what happened. They were able to bring it back. But I think this time, I think the system is so overweight that another glitch like we had back in 2008, there's no way they will be able to bring it back. And that glitch is just shortly around the corner. So,
maybe so.
Whether it's the actual glitch that it falls underneath its own weight, or whether there's going to be some sort of event to cause it, there's certainly a lot of events out there to, you know, have it filter into our markets. Today you had the Missouri National Guard, the governor, Missouri Governor Jay Nixon. He signed an executive order activating the Missouri National Guard this afternoon, in order to support any law enforcement during the period of unrest that might occur once the grand jury's decision concerning the investigation into the death of Michael Brown. And it still amazes me that it's taken this long for them to come to a decision. I mean, how difficult can it be? So you have to ask yourself, why are they prolonging this decision? I said if they come out next week, perhaps they're hoping that because it's Thanksgiving Day weekend, that if they release it on Monday, people will be too involved in their holiday to pay much attention to this decision. But then again, when you have the governor come out and do this executive order activating the National Guard, maybe the decision will come sooner than later.
I think part of the reason is that they are allegedly giving every detail to the grand jury. They have seen a report that indicates they're a typical grand jury in a similar problem would get, who knows, 50% of all the details, right? They'd hit the high notes, and that would be it. That's what they'd give to the grand jury. In this particular instance, they are going to give everything right down to when the police officer last shined his shoes. And they're going to tell every possible detail because they know that whatever happens here, people are going to be angry about a decision no matter which way this goes. Some people are going to be angry if Michael Brown, if the police officer is exonerated from responsibility from shooting Michael Brown. Other people are going to be angry if the police officer is indicted and declared by the grand jury to be responsible, or at least possibly responsible, for shooting Michael Brown unlawfully. Going to be people, so they're going to try, the government's going to try to give every detail it can. They know somebody is going to complain and perhaps even sue and challenge the validity of the indictment process, and so I'm going to guess they're trying to dot every I and cross every T, and that takes extra time. On top of which, one other point is, the longer they take, the colder it gets.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if this had broken loose, if this indictment was coming out in the middle of July or August, in a good old summertime, we could expect riots for sure. Cold weather, people don't want to riot in the cold weather. Yeah. So, I don't know, there's a certain amount of politics, certain amount of practicality. Who knows what's going on here? And don't forget the jurors, they may be dragging their feet because they're probably getting paid $6 a day or something like that. To be on the grand jury, so, well, hey, I'm not going to pass up an opportunity to make a fast $6 a day, you know.
Well, we're going to get into more economic numbers and so forth, but I saw this report today, and it just irritated me because there was information in here that I did not know. And what it is about, it's a vaccine court, and this would be a topic for Wednesday, but I decided to do it today. There's an obscure vaccine court, and this court doesn't work as designed, and it was a system Congress established to speed help to Americans harmed by vaccines. Have you heard this, Al?
I'm aware of it superficially.
But I was surprised, and of course we know anything that government does, the system's not working as it was intended. But I also, and I do know that pharmaceutical companies and so forth, they do receive cuts and breaks and so forth. But this is a court that people can go to, and these vaccines, I mean, we hear about vaccines, how bad they are for you, and all the problems from children. I have family members who have a son that doesn't speak, and they believe it was because of his the vaccinations that he received. We hear this time and time again how these kids are being impacted, from the vaccines, polio, measles, and everything else that they put in there. And but it was taking a very long time, and these pharmaceutical companies, they were facing a barrage of lawsuits from these parents. So what Congress did is they gave a break both to the pharmaceutical companies and to those who receive a vaccine to prevent one illness yet suffered another, to protect the nation's supply. The lawmakers shielded companies from jury verdicts, shifting liability from injuries to the U.S. government. And that part of it worked. Vaccines, of course, are widely available and very profitable. And to help people harmed by shots, Congress created the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, and you have government doctors and lawyers that review claims, and if they believe it is more likely than not that a vaccine and not something else caused the injury, they tap, this is what he didn't know, a $3.5 billion fund to pay for future care and lost wages. That fund is replenished by a 75% tax on each vaccine. So not only
75%?
75 cent tax.
All right.
On each vaccine. Well, it probably equals out to that if you figure out how little.
No, it doesn't. It equals, 75%.
Yeah. If the government concludes that the vaccination was not the likely cost, it contests the claim in vaccine court. And but to me, I just thought that was $3.5 billion fund.
Yeah, I get that, but I doubt that it'd go very far. You get a child, for example, that gets one of these, has a problem with a vaccine. Assuming you can prove it in court,
I wonder how many millions of dollars a jury is going to award, because that child is going to deal with that problem for the next 70, 80 years. This isn't something that goes away in 6 months or 5 years. It'll be there for a lifetime. What will a jury award under those circumstances? It's got to be enormous. You're going to face some potentially enormous verdicts plus enormous amount of publicity. You get some jury who gives off and hands out $100 million. They may never collect. The child who was afflicted might never collect that $100 million, but you can bet that the attendant publicity will be enormous, and the ability of the drug manufacturers to continue selling that vaccine will be diminished. It'll cut into profits. This is a place, to my mind, where if your child has been injured by one of these vaccines, or you think he has, you can go dissipate your time and your energy, and the probability of collecting will not be high. And if you do collect, I doubt that you'll receive enough to really take care of the child.
But there is no jury. That's just the fund they tap into.
They get some experts on it and the rest, that sort of thing, that are going to make a decision, and they're going to pussyfoot around and pretend they're thinking this through very carefully. But in the final analysis,
I won't bet
that vaccine court is not favorable to the children or individuals who've taken these vaccines.
Absolutely not.
Just a place for you, again, you waste your time, your effort, get an attorney, go through the motions, and maybe get something, and maybe you don't.
It just disturbed me, because here you have the government getting in the way. These vaccines shouldn't be forced upon these children. And the government is helping to cover it up. That's what it is. The government is helping to cover it up.
This isn't an easy situation. I don't know what you'd do with it. It may be that these vaccines are manufactured with the best interests of the consumer at heart. It's possible. But there's all kinds of crazy things in the vaccine, from live viruses or whatever, mercury, detergent. There's all kinds of crazy things in these vaccines, and it's difficult to see how they can be adequately justified. Many of them come online without adequate testing. All right? For example, there'll be a vaccine out in the next year for Ebola. I'll guarantee that it has not had adequate testing when it hits the markets, if it's not there already. It'll be some, it's an emergency. What it's an emergency is there's an opportunity to make a bunch of money right now, and we got to get out there while people are afraid of this stuff and sell that Ebola vaccine. Now, it may not be true that that's happening right now relative to Ebola, but that's the mindset, from my perspective, that you'll find in the major pharmaceutical industries. It's not an idea about healing people. Nobody wants to heal people. There's nothing happening. When was the last time? I can remember as a kid, they pretty much knocked out tuberculosis. They pretty much knocked out polio.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but now
we don't knock out diseases anymore. That's a bad business model. What we want to do is just sell vaccines and, I don't know, whatever else, that will suppress symptoms, but we can get people to continue to pay and pay and pay for the balance of their natural lives. They capture customers rather than heal them. They capture them.
But a lot of these diseases are on the rise.
Well, I
understand. They're beginning to creep back into this country because of the massive immigration.
Aliens for one thing, poor nutrition for another thing.
Yep.
Oh, even the mandatory health care. Before this is done, we're all going to be sicker than we were when I was a young man. So we'll see. Before we find out how sick we can be and what kind of problems we're headed for, take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Are you concerned about prescription drug dependency to stay healthy? Are you worried that the cost and availability of your medications may put your health at risk? Perhaps it's time you consider a natural, safe, and effective way to deal with your health problems. If only you knew where to start. Start right here. Tune in to Herb Talk Live with herbalist Wendy Wilson every Tuesday and Thursday evening, 7 p.m. on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with Melody Cedarstrom. Got an article from CNBC. The headline is Markets Living on Borrowed Time. Wilbur Ross.
Wilbur.
Yep.
Yeah, Wilbur.
Yeah. She's a private equity billionaire. That's Mr. Wilbur to you,
Mr.
Melody.
Wilbur.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Global financial markets are living on borrowed time with geopolitical crises and deflationary risks still a concern, according to private equity billionaire Wilbur Ross. Again, he's talking to CNBC. He says, I think the markets are living on borrowed time because investors have no alternatives. Now, that strikes me as a strange statement. You've always got an alternative. All right, there he is. Investing is like squeezing a balloon. I don't care what they do. If they squeeze it at one end, it bulges at the opposite end. All right, if you can't get in where they're squeezing it, you look to the other end. There's something around there. But he goes on. He says, I think the markets are living on borrowed time because investors have no alternatives. The chairman and chief executive private equity firm W.L. Ross & Company told CNBC Europe's Squawk Box on Monday. Everyone's scared to death of long-term fixed income because we know rates will be going up. Interest rates are going up. They don't want to buy at current. They want to buy long-term right now because they know when the rates go up, they're going to be losing their investment. It'll be diminished in value to some degree. Short-term fixed income doesn't give you any yield. That's because we have zero interest rate. You can't take that right now, according to Mr. Ross. Commodities are going no place except down, and that implies deflation. And he continues, he
implies
says...
Implies manipulation.
Well, manipulation, but prices are falling.
Manipulation.
It So where else can you put your money unless you want to buy a $100 million Alberto Giacometti sculpture, he said. Now, what he's actually saying here is that it's hard to find good investments right now in stocks, bonds, commodities. And he is suggesting that maybe the place to go is collectibles. So, you know, I mean, I bring that to everybody's attention. I mean, man's a billionaire. He might know what he's talking about, you know. And I'm wondering, what do you think about collectibles, Melody?
Well, I think there's various markets to where collectibles do very well. We know during the Weimar Republic, collectibles did very well in their hyperinflation. That's what kept people going. Their collection, their coin collections, their art, their diamonds, these high-valued things maintain their value. Mm-hmm. And what's so disturbing is you hear from so many sources nowadays, every time you want to talk about collectibles, every time you want to talk about better quality coins, particularly in the venue that, you know, I advertise in and so forth, you hear people, who's going to want to buy those coins? And but yet, this is what collectibles helped people through very difficult times. Even as we saw gold drop to this level from 1900, the better grade coins, the higher valued coins, the true collectible coins, they've done well. They're trading, they're going up. There's a market there. There's buyers and there's sellers. It's a thriving area of the gold market. And so it's very important to do not underestimate what collectible coins can do in your portfolio. Now, it does come back to a degree of suitability. You know, if it's not suitable for you, no, you don't want to go there. But it's a great way to diversify your portfolio if you have the money to do so. And I know a lot of the listeners do. A lot of my clients have very nice portfolios. And certainly they can go into maybe a little bit better quality. Today I picked a coin that I think it's not a high-grade coin, but it still has a little bit of scarcity to it. And it's one of my favorite coins as far as the design. And I think everybody knows it's the $10 Indians. And I am going to start bringing some little bit better quality coins to the program for those of you that would like to add them to your portfolio. But today we have something that it does have some true scarcity. It has good value. These coins are minted from 1907 to 1933. And these $10 Indians were actually produced by the millions out of the original mintage of nearly 15 million. Only 98,000 survivors are known in mint state 62 condition. And, of course, it's a combination of PCGS and NGC. Their surviving population is about half of what the $10 Liberty would be in a mint state 62. So there you can see they're a lot less, they're a lot more scarce, the $10 Indian. And they have great value. They're private. They're secure. They're liquid. So we have Mint State 62 $10 Indian gold pieces for $782. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188.
All right. I've got another article here from Strategic Cultural Foundation. This was penned by former U.S. Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, and he spoke about global threats, the secession of the Crimea and Ukraine's NATO accession, meaning the proposal that the Ukraine join NATO. Mr. Kissinger said there is currently an urgent need for a new world order. But its coming into being will be long and complicated. Right? Now, I'm not in favor of a new world order. I'm not in favor of the United States abandoning its national security in order to join as some sort of an administrative division of a global
government. It just, I can't imagine the day will ever come when I will sit back and say, well, maybe that's an okay idea. I don't think so. There's too much at stake. There's things that happened in this country that are too valuable and unprecedented, and this country really has been an exceptional and even unique nation, and that's when they are preparing to give that all away in order to join a new world order. I'm not prepared to do so, and when Kissinger advocates a new world order, I'm not in favor, but I am pleased when he says, but its coming will be long and complicated. That means it won't be here, you know, next week, next month, next year. It's going to take a while. He says there are no universally accepted rules. There is a Chinese view, an Islamic view, the Western view, and to some extent the Russian view. And these views are not always compatible. Now, it's interesting to me, he's saying the Russians are sufficiently significant. We've got the Western view, that would be Europe and the United States. We've got the Chinese view, we've got the Islamic view. But he's giving Russia, he's saying, yeah, the Russians, they have a view on this also. And the views are not always compatible. Speaking of Crimea's accession to Russia, he noted that this is a special case, that the Ukraine and Russia were one country for a long time. In his view, the West must recognize its mistakes. Europe and America did not understand the impact of these events, starting with the negotiations about Ukraine's economic relations with the European Union and culminating in the demonstrations in Kiev. All these and their impacts should have been subject to a dialogue with Russia. He is sure that Ukraine has always had a special significance for Russia. Failure to understand this was fatal. And the Ukrainian authorities can forget about the Crimean Peninsula. What he's saying is, look, the Russians got the Crimean Peninsula. You're not getting it back. Forget it. It's over. It's done. Goes on, he says, nobody in the West offered a concrete program to restore the Crimea. Nobody is willing to fight over eastern Ukraine. Introducing anti-Russian sanctions was a mistake. We have to remember that Russia is an important part of the international system and therefore useful in solving all sorts of other crises. For example, in the agreement on nuclear proliferation with Iran or over Syria, this has to have preference over a tactical escalation in a specific case. He's talking about Ukraine. He added that Ukraine should not hope to become a member of NATO in the foreseeable future, as the alliance will never vote unilaterally for a cession of the Ukraine. Well, I'm no fan of Kissinger's. I'm no fan of the New World Order. But I have to agree that Mr. Kissinger is probably he's being sensible in this particular situation. He said, look, this is done. Russia's got the Crimea. Stop grumbling. It's over. They're going to probably didn't say so, but they're going to probably capture the eastern Ukraine. On top of that, that'll probably be joined one way or another to Russia in the near future. And the Ukraine itself should forget about joining NATO. It's not going to happen. It was too much of a hot potato. It was too much of a hot button for Russia to accept. And therefore, we were wrong to ever suppose that the existing government of Ukraine could be replaced by a pro-Western government. That's what we did. We overthrew the existing government of Ukraine. Then Russia said, oh, no, you're not. We're not going to let you get away with that. Next thing you know, Eastern Ukraine said, we want to be in Russia. So Kissinger's admitting we made mistakes, and he says, look, time to get over it and move on. I agree with him.
This isn't the first time he's come out against the sanctions against Russia. He had mentioned previously it's going to be wrong. It will backfire. And what I found interesting about this is his statement, talking about how important Russia is of the international system. And, you know, we often talk about, well, is China part of the New World Order? Is this country part of the New World Order? I think they're all part of the New World Order, and they all have their part to play. And if you mess with it, it upsets their system. And so, you know, it what happens.
What do you think the essence is of the New World Order, Melody? What's the essential feature? Fiat currency.
Yes.
Fiat,
yeah, that's
right. Currency. Then I don't care how you, there is not going to be a New World Order unless we have a single global fiat currency. They had close to establish that with the U.S. dollar until Bush went in and invaded Iraq and it got screwed up. The U.S. dollar was really earmarked, in my opinion, to be the global currency for the New World Order. Once that blew up in Iraq and it said, oh my gosh, this is all, now it's going to be the global currency. It's got to be a fiat currency, though, Melody. It's a single currency, ultimately, and it's got to be fiat if there's going to be a new world order. Somebody's going to be at the in a position controlling the levers and say, well, we give this much fiat currency to North America, this much to Europe, this much to Africa, and if you don't do what we tell you, we won't even give you that much.
Well, I think we've seen that the fiat currency for the new world order and how it has allowed these governments to position themselves. I think the next step is there has to be an agreed currency. And I'm not so sure it really was the U.S. It was part of the problem. It was part of the system, absolutely. And it was, but I'm not sure that was their ultimate.
I think it was
for
I can't
the U.S.
prove it,
dollar
it
to
the
be
world reserve currency
because
which
that would still
close.
Yeah, but you would that would still leave the U.S. as in control, and if you have a new world order, there's no country that is in control. You have people in control, and they all have to have their level playing field. So, and if the U.S. was the fiat currency amongst all, I'm not sure that would.
I'm not sure either, but I think it was. I'm inclined
but
to think
my
it was
point
probably
is,
true.
Where I think where we're at is you're right. It does have to have one currency, but I do believe that one currency will very much be backed somewhat by gold to eliminate these governments from manipulating their currencies.
Well,
they need to stabilize it. They'll still be fiat to a very large degree. Oh, I'm not saying there's going to be, you know, 100% backing by gold, but it will be a small amount of gold in order to stabilize so these countries can no longer manipulate their currencies in order to help their exports. So
well, there may be some truth
now,
to
whether
that.
There's
gold
a lot of truth to it.
Establish trust
a lot of truth
in
to
the
it.
New Well, I get that, but it won't be a majority any more than it was a majority for the euro. They started the euro out where it was going to be backed by, what, 15% gold?
I think all of these are tests. I think a lot of them are, you know, and you're right. The euro was backed a little bit. I mean,
it was supposed to, and that was done to inspire trust in the currency. But it was still primarily a fiat currency,
exactly.
And it was just a question of time before.
And
from my perspective, fiat currency, it's the foundation for big government everywhere, and it's the foundation for the New World Order. And if they can't have a fiat currency, the whole system goes down.
And I think, too, by having that euro backed by a little bit of gold, it was one way to get these other countries to accept it. I mean, how else are you going to have all these countries change their currencies? The people didn't want it. The people knew that everything they would, all their costs would rise. So, I mean, it had to be an attractive form of currency.
They calculated just how much BS did they have to attach to the program in order to get people. Well, they may not have wanted it. You know.
Politicians just put it through.
Well, I get that, but it was justified to some extent by the presence of gold.
Exactly.
All right.
Exactly.
And it may have been decisive. It may be determinative for a small percentage of the population. Says, well, all right, if there's going to be some gold, I guess I'll go along with it. All right. But in the end, how much gold is there? How redeemable in gold is the euro right now? You know, and the system is dependent on fiat currency. You know, for what it's worth, the way fiat currency, well, let's take a break. We'll talk about fiat currency when we return. We'll take a break right now for some commercial announcements, and Melody and I will be back in a moment.
Job stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and we just started talking about fiat currency when we broke for the last set of commercials. And I just want to explain this to you. It's something, you know, it's kind of an insight that's crossed my mind just in the last couple of days where I said, I got this a little bit better than maybe I have in the past. Government likes fiat currency. All right. Big government depends on fiat currency, because it allows government to spin currency out of thin air and ultimately spend it to the advantage of the government. It grows the government. It gives the government more power. And here's where the problem is. Let's suppose that I was going to buy $100,000 worth of land from Melody. And how would I pay for that? I've got to earn $100,000 in the first place or inherit it, but somebody actually has to work for $100,000, and I'm going to give Melody something worth $100,000 that reflects $100,000 worth of my effort, my work that I've saved and became a kind of wealth, and now I can give the $100,000 to Melody, and she can give me that piece of property. I'm trading her substance for substance. But when the government prints fiat currency, they're not trading substance for substance. They're caught in a situation, or we're caught in a situation, where the government prints what is essentially an insufficient, a non-sufficient fund check, an NSF check, and they say, here, Melody, here's a check for $100,000 for your land. And Melody might sit back and say, well, great, I got $100,000. How does she get paid for the land? All she got is a piece of paper. She didn't get $100,000 in real wealth that had been produced by the government. All she got is a piece of paper. But it'll work if she can now come to me with that $100,000 piece of paper and say, Al, I'd like to buy, a house that I own. All right. I'd like to buy a car you own. I'd like to buy a collection of gold that you own. I want to buy something tangible, and I want to give you this piece of paper. And if I'm willing to take that piece of paper, Then Melody gets paid her $100,000. She gave something worth $100,000 to the government. The government gave her a piece of paper. She gives the paper to me. I give her something tangible. Melody is not being paid by the government. She's being paid by whoever takes that $100,000 from her. That means the government gets to buy things at no cost. They are betting that they can give worthless pieces of paper to Melody or to you in the audience or to me, and that we will say, that's okay, I can take that worthless piece of paper because I know there's some other idiot out there in the audience who will accept the $100,000 piece of paper, and they'll give me something tangible. The problem is that if you and I deal directly between us, you have to make enough effort, you have to generate enough work where you can pay with something tangible. If it's only your own effort, your sweat equity that you've invested over the years, you pay for what you buy from me. Government does not pay. They rely on one of you. They give me $100,000. They bet I can find some clown who will take the $100,000 and give me something tangible. I don't know if that's making much sense, Melody, but it's the core, from my perspective, of why fiat currency is so dangerous. Whoever is producing it gets to just buy whatever they want. It's like me walking around with a check. I'm going to write a check for $100,000. I don't have money to cover $100,000, but I'm going to write a check for it. Doesn't matter, because if I can give it to Melody, she can give it to somebody else, and they'll pay her. If I can write a check for $500,000, I can write a check for $500 million. What difference does it make? I don't have to pay with anything tangible. We rely on the guy who receives the $500 million check from me to find some other idiot who's willing to take that $500 check or $500 million check and give something tangible. Does that make any sense, Melody? Do you see what I'm saying there?
Well, sure it does. I mean, it's, you know, when you have that type of, you know, when you have a fiat currency, that's how the government continues to grow.
That's exactly right.
Spend, there's no accountability. And that was the whole reason why they took us and put us on a fiat currency, so these governments can continue to grow and to take from the people.
Yes, that's exactly right.
That simple.
Government doesn't have to produce. Government just has to write checks, and then the checks are redeemed by other individuals out in the private sector.
But we work, and that's why our taxes are getting to the point, and even Clinton said, hey, our taxes are going to be 85% of what we make.
Yeah.
And we're not that far away.
No, I know.
But, you know, people just shrug it off. You know, a lot of our problems, you know, I hate to say this, but, you know, it's folks, people got to wake up.
I know.
You've got to wake up, and in the 90s, when we're being told that our taxes are going to be 85%, there should have been outrage.
Mm-hmm. But
they said,
what did
no,
we
they're
think
not. No, they won't be.
We just thought, well, that'll be somebody else, not me.
It'll be somebody else, not me. But there was a...
And besides, what time is Dancing with the Stars?
David Stockman, he's a former director of the U.S. Office of Management and Budget, policymaker, you know, you put any name after his title, financier, seer, politician. But he was interviewed, and he came out, and it's so simple. And we try to keep things simple. I mean, we can run through all the numbers of the COMEX, the shortages, and it just confuses people. It's exciting and everything, but it's not part of the fundamentals as far as when you're looking to gold and silver. It is, but it's on the paper side. And he talked and he stated in this interview, he says, once the central banks lose control, that there is an out-and-out currency war underway. He believes that the global economy is cooling rapidly because that's how you explain oil at $75 a barrel. He says you're going to have this huge shock to confidence. And we talk about confidence all the time in the central banks. He says people are going to realize this has been a giant con game for decades, and it's coming to an end. And, you know, now they only quote Alan Greenspan because when he appeared before the Council of Foreign Relations, you know, and he talks about the only currency out there that is not controlled by the central banks.
Yeah.
It's gold.
That's right.
Gold. Gold will be rediscovered. So you can either wait until it's rediscovered and the price continues to go higher and higher and higher, because that's when everybody gets into the market. Oh, they never buy on the way down. They only buy when it's back up at 2,000. Then you'll get in and say, gee, I wish I would have. But, I mean, you can go back to, you know, in 1966, Greenspan. He was a supporter of the gold standard, and he was a very strong critic of the Federal Reserve. But it wasn't until he became part of the system that he sort of, you know, lost his voice when it came to the gold standard and what has happened.
The price was right. They made him an offer he couldn't
refuse.
Yeah.
He couldn't refuse.
Now he's one of the most, he has been one of the most important men in the world. It would be arguable that Greenspan enjoyed a level of status that he was in the top 100 most powerful people in the world for much of his professional life, right? Even now, he's significant. People listen to him. He doesn't have the same kind of power, but he has influence. That's tough to turn down.
Yeah.
I'm not justifying, but I'm just saying. You know, they come up and say, well, you know, we've got a really bright and shiny apple here. Would you like a bite, you know, Mr. Greenspan? And he said, yes, I would. That's a pretty tempting looking apple. And now that he's no longer feasting on that apple, now he's come back. He got religion again. He's going to try to, you know, be honest and tell us the truth, just at least to some degree. But
in, you know, and he talked about once you took us off the gold standard, I mean, it was an unlimited expansion of credit.
Yeah.
And here we are today. It's so simple to understand. But yet people don't grasp the importance.
For people who are curious about this, you should read chapter 47. In Genesis, the book of Genesis in the Bible. And if you read it and you pay attention, you will see how 3,700 years ago or thereabouts, over 3,000 years ago, Joseph took control of Egypt by the application of economic principles. It's right there in the Bible. He was the world's first economist. And it's been, this is not news. This has been here for over 3,000 years. It's been in the Bible. They tell you how to take over nations if you care to read it. They knew how to do it 3,000 years ago. If you could read chapter 47 of Genesis and understand it, you would know more about economics than probably 99% of the people in the world. And maybe a lot more, even a higher percentage than that. Genesis chapter 47. Read it. See what happened. Huh? The Egyptian people were pushed into bondage by Joseph. You know, the Jewish people say, oh, the Egyptians had us as slaves. It's so sad. Look, Joseph put the Egyptian people into bondage long before the Egyptians put the Jews into bondage. It's an eye-opening chapter in the Bible, particularly because virtually no one realizes what it means. I think that modern economics is intentionally presented in a way that is so complex and confusing that almost everybody says, I'm out of here. I'm not listening anymore to that economic nonsense. It's all gobbledygook. I don't get it. What time is Dancing with the Stars on? They could understand it and present it in one chapter back 3,000 years ago. Today it takes books and books and books. You understand Genesis 47, and you will understand more about economics than probably, and again, 99.9% of the people in the world or even in the government. Take a look at it. Make the effort.
Well, if you don't want to buy gold, which is, to me, is I can't even imagine people not wanting to buy gold at these levels, but today, two of the world's largest chocolate makers say the path that we're heading down, they cite a perfect storm. Less cocoa is being produced as more and more people are devouring chocolate. In 2013, consumers ate about 70,000 metric tons more cocoa. That was more cocoa than was produced. And that deficit could go up to about 1 million metric tons by 2020. And you have the Ivory Coast and Ghana that produce more than 70% of the world's beans. And both countries are experiencing dry weather that limits growth. So
now it's getting really sweet.
It's getting bad. You can take away people's chocolate.
Away the chocolate, and the end is near, that's for sure.
And then what they're telling you is to buy it in bulk and to hide your stash.
What a world.
Hide it with your gold.
You know, but it's just another sign of the kinds of problems we're having in this world. It's not just the United States. It's a global phenomena. We are simply headed toward difficult and potentially dangerous times. You've got to do what you can to protect yourself. And, you know, you've all heard it said by me and 100 other people besides that. You got to get some guns, got to get some bullets, got to get some food, got to get some water, got to get some gold and some silver. Get ready. It's your insurance policy. There are problems headed our way. It is extremely unlikely that we're going to be able to evade those problems. We may be able to postpone them, but I don't think we can escape them. Mm-hmm. We see where the nation of Japan is in a recession right now. Fourth biggest economy in the world. First is the European Union. First the United States. First, the United States, second, European Union, third, China, fourth, Japan. China's slowing down. European Union is in or near recession. Japan is in recession. United States is not in good shape. It doesn't, you don't need the gift of prophecy to point out, we got problems headed our way, and they're going to be very difficult to get around. Going to have to protect yourself. May even have, by the time you get done, get your silver, get your guns, bullets, food, water, and stock up on chocolate. All right? Nobody wants to go through a depression without chocolate, Melody.
Not at all.
Okay?
Not at all.
I'll put up without any hot water. I'll put up with all electricity, but you better produce my chocolate or I'm going to riot, Melody. Be marching in the streets.
What's interesting about Japan's recession is that, they just put how many trillions of dollars in stimulus into their markets?
Didn't work.
And it didn't work. And the thing is, why is Japan really in a recession? When you have the world's largest economy. Pardon?
They went too far into debt.
But then also you don't have the same, the manufacturers that they have. Nobody's buying anything.
I understand.
And that comes from when the U.S.
thing is collapsing.
And when the U.S. has the largest world economy, wouldn't you think that we're not pulling our end, to help?
Well, we'll talk about that mañana, Melody. We're out of time, folks. We want to thank you all for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.